Technorama episode 387 for October 23rd, 2013.
My poor parents.
Good.
I think it's an investment firm.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
So now that the furlough is over, where do I collect my Technorama paycheck again?
Over there, in the media corner.
I tried it.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch
taxes take your whole check.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for October 23rd, 2013. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, both the fiction and non-fiction kind, and all things geek. Because we say science and sci-fi, they're kind of related. Is that redundant at all? It's like the A side and B side of a record.
They can be exclusive.
If you're new to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. I am Chuck Tomasi, and with me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm feeling slightly tardy.
Tardy? Late?
Yeah, because we should have been recording this last night.
Yeah, it was last night, but I was not feeling well on Sunday night. Picked up something on my last trip to California, and it really kicked me in the backside. So I am a little medicated today, feeling a little bit better. Enough to do this. And then the people in the office say, oh, we need you to do an audio patch on one of the voiceovers you did for us. Now, you know how hard it is to match audio on a voiceover?
Oh, it can be, yes. It'd be difficult.
You can usually tell, even on the same microphone, 10 minutes later, you can tell it's patched in for some reason. Mm-hmm. Now I'm on a different microphone, different room, and I have a cold. That'll sound wonderful. Yeah. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah, good luck.
Coming up in this episode of Technorama, we've got Vatican hijinks, weight loss for computers, promises the 80s made us. Oh, you sad, sad 80s, and much, much more
and
coming up.
There's plenty of those to go around right after this. Yeah.
All right, it works. Yes, I got it back. I got every bit of it.
It's small, fast, does hex and block edits. But
oh, that's a good idea. I didn't think about that last time.
We're your geek morning show.
That's the thing about podcasts. We can be up anytime.
Don't listen to this while operating heavy machinery. You could spit out your water. I wonder what you'd get. Okay, I'm going to stop right there and make my comment.
Hey, wake me up when you're done.
I completely missed that one.
The writers of Back to the Future didn't see that one coming. Thanks, man. I had to think about that.
There are only two certainties in the universe. They are one and zero. One of them might be Craig. The other may be Chuck. Together they form Binary Code and Technorama.
14, 25, and then 16. That's all that there was.
I see.
Now does it make sense?
No, I'm trying to figure it out, actually.
Nah, come on, that's the fourth time I've told you that.
I know, but it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. Anyway, back to the show.
Okay, slower than molasses in January, I tell you. We get to play the...
Wait.
Oh, that's not the happy music song. That's coming up later. See, I told you slightly medicated. Here we go.
Reach, man, and pull. Oh, wait.
Oh, boy.
Is that you just playing the typewriter?
Somebody did in high school band? Paid to do this typewriter thing.
Yeah. Is that what you played in high school band?
That's what Marion Call played in high school band.
This one time at band camp?
She hauled it around. People thought it was an accordion. It's a multi-purpose instrument. We have two in the feedback bag. The first one is from Avner. He writes, yes.
Oh, that settles that.
We've got two yes. Thank you. Whatever the yes is for, yeah. We've got two of them. Our listeners are, well, at least they're writing, Craig.
Put that on the scoreboard. Hey, put that on the scoreboard so we keep a tally. Yeah.
At least they're writing. Yeah. At least they're writing. Right. We have another one from Weber. Weber writes, the subject is show titles. I have been out of touch, long story, for a while. Mm-hmm. So this may not be a new idea. Have you considered asking listeners for show titles? Then you would be responsible for finding a way to fit that into the show, or not. I love like the way he leaves it all up to us. Mm-hmm. Here are some examples.
Yeah.
What is it? It's green. Use the forks, green? Luke. We may have used that one before. I don't know.
That sounds somewhat familiar, but maybe so. Maybe
this
not.
This one might be a little long for our show title. Your mother was a hamster and your father smelt of elderberries. So it might be able to split into back-to-back shows. The mother and father show.
Yeah.
And then he actually gave us the one for today's show. Me parents, me poor parents.
Hey, it sounds like Sean Connery after an attack with a zombie.
What?
Me parents. Instead of brains, my brains.
No, it's his bearings.
Come on, man. Work with me. Oh, bearings. My bearings.
Don't you remember Scotty?
Yes, I do.
Lamenting over his engine working really hard. We also have Beam Me Back Down, Scotty. I'm a podcaster, not a doctor. And this one I thought was rather nice. It just says, nee.
Yeah, why haven't we used that before?
Have we used that before?
No, I said, why haven't we?
I don't know. It's only been 9 years.
No, you think we'd have covered all our bases by now.
I'm sure our listeners have plenty more ideas where those came from. Please let us know. Send us an email to technorama@chuckchat.com or leave us a voicemail. You know the number, 206-222-2228. Well, wow. I got to scroll down to the
somebody
bottom.
Somebody knows our number, but it's not you.
It's been what, 3 weeks and I lost it. We better call, make sure it still works.
Hey, three numbers repeat.
Boy, the government took more than my paycheck. I'll tell you that much.
So you could actually run a zip algorithm on our number, and you know you can take that two down to three, and so two threes.
A zip algorithm. Let's do the history thing.
Okay.
On this day in history for October 23rd, 2013. This is October 23rd, 2013. Like I just said, it's the 296th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 69 days remaining in 2013. It was on this date in 1906 that Alberto Santos Dumont flies an airplane in the first heavier-than-air flight in Europe at Champ de Bagatelle, Paris, France. I hope I massacred that wonderfully.
Yeah, no, it sounded great, at least. That same date, 1911, was the first use of aircraft in war. An Italian pilot takes off from Libya to observe Turkish army lines during the Turco-Italian War.
You're lucky, man. I chopped that in about a third of what it was. You would have been having fun with that.
Speaking of the zip algorithm.
Speaking of airlines, also on October 23rd, 1929, the first North American Transcontinental Air Service begins between New York City, and Los Angeles, California.
And 55 years ago, the Smurfs appear for the first time in a story, La Flûte à Six Crufts.
No, that's the one I chopped in about a third. Yeah. That was a long, long one, because it says what magazine it first appeared in and what it later became known as and blah, blah, blah. Gary Gebelich sets a land speed record in the rocket-powered automobile called the Blue Flame, fueled with natural gas and burritos today in 1970.
And, excuse me, And 1 year ago today, after 38 years, the world's first teletext service, BBC CFAX, ceases broadcast due to Northern Ireland completing the digital switchover.
Finally.
Yeah.
Happy birthday goes out on this day to American actor Gummo Marx. He was the fifth Marx brother. Harpo, Chico, Groucho, and Zeppo, and the little lone Gummo, born on this date in 1893.
And the man from whom Fujita?
Fujita.
Fujita wind speed scale is named. Japanese meteorologist Ted Fujita, born today in 1920.
You know, like tornadoes are F1, F2, F3. That's him.
Yep, that's right.
TV host Johnny Carson was born on this date in 1925.
And also born in 1942, author, screenwriter, director, and producer Michael Crichton.
Director Sam Raimi turns 54 in his honor. Kaboom!
And also turning 54, singer-songwriter, comedian, and actor Weird Al Yankovic.
And Grant DeMahara of the Mythbusters turns 43 today. And that's the... Yeah. Oh, wait, we forgot one. It's Mole Day. 10 to the 23rd. Get it?
Yes.
Avogadro's number, 6.02 times 10 to the 23rd.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
And that's the way it was on this day in history for October 23rd, 2013.
Bad news, everyone.
Yeah, bad news. The Vatican has misspelled, of all things, Jesus on a commemorative coin. Thank you, Madmar, for
sending this. How does this happen?
You think there'd be proofreaders. No, it's clearly in Latin because they have the V for the U in Jesus.
Yeah.
But I don't recall anywhere that J's turn into L in Latin. They have it L-E-S-V-S.
You know, my first thought was, remember Indiana Jones was trying to remember how to spell Jehovah?
Yeah.
Wait, and he goes, it starts with an H.
In Latin, it starts with an I.
So my first thought was, I wonder if they spelled it, you know, some weird way like that. So not weird, because I guess that would be more natural than English. I don't know. But anyway, you know what I mean?
Did you see the link that I included? It made me think of Homer Simpson. You thought Indiana Jones, I think of Homer Simpson, where he's sent away on the plane to be a missionary. And he goes, a missionary? I don't even believe in Jeebus. And then the plane's taken over. He goes, oh, save me, Jeebus.
Jeebus.
Jesus. 1 second he doesn't believe in him, but he's saying, save me.
Oh boy. So didn't they do a recall on these coins?
The independent, only 4 or so of the 6,000 medallions were sold before someone noticed. Praise Lisa's.
Yeah, praise Lisa's. Who's he?
I'll bet they'll be valuable.
Yeah.
We couldn't let that one go. It's not exactly tech. It's not exactly science. It's not even science fiction.
Technically, they should have had a J, K, and then they could have done the L. But
H, I, J, K, L, Jesus. Right.
Okay, Jesus.
Hey, put on your reminder calendar things that August 26th, 2032. You've got less than 20 years now to think about this. Put it on your calendar because Ukrainian astronomers have just detected a 1,350-foot wide, or 410 meters, minor planet that's headed our way to the impact.
And not for a visit.
The impact risk is minimal, but it's now the most serious near-term celestial threat to face our planet.
Mm-hmm. I think NASA had just come out and said it will not be a threat, but or other than it will be passing really close to us.
So close you can reach out and touch it.
Yeah.
Not, phone home. It knocks the space shuttle out of orbit.
You know, but it leads me to think, well, who do you believe? Okay. Believe NASA, I would hope. But then you got these guys saying something different. What, you know, actually, you know what? Even my son was like, well, what happens? What do you do if an asteroid's coming to Earth?
You send Bruce Willis up, of course.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, maybe one day you'll come. We won't have a Bruce Willis.
2032. Let's see. I'll be retired by then. That'll be good enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I remember reading several, and we may have talked about it on the show before, several options of dealing with some of these meteors that are coming really close. One of them was to, which I thought was sounded a little more out there, was painting it white in the different colors, like a white color would cause it to change its trajectory.
Oh.
Because it would heat and cold and that kind of thing.
What if you painted it half and half? Would it cause it to spin and then you could get a little different trajectory?
Or, yeah, a little English when it hits Earth. in the side pocket. No. So I don't know. I'm curious to what will we actually do? What, you know, so we have 19 years to do something about a meteor. Would we wait till the last minute like Congress?
In the time it's taken to explain this, the asteroid has moved from here to here.
Oh, okay.
Now I get it. No, yeah. No. No, go back up.
Yeah.
We already poked fun at that one.
Yes, right. Yeah, let it go.
Now, we mentioned that we normally do this show on Sunday night, but unfortunately, due to illness and whatnot, we're doing this on Monday night this week. Sorry. But you can keep track of us on Google+ and all the other social networks. Let's see. What are we? Technorama Podcast on Twitter, right?
Google+.
And the Technorama Podcast page on Facebook. We have all those things. So if you watch that, you'll know when we're doing our show.
Here you go. We're twitter.com/Technorama on Twitter.
We got Technorama?
Technorama.
Well,
shows how yes, much we I do.
Use Twitter anymore.
We're Technorama Podcast on YouTube and Google+ and Facebook. We need to search for Technorama page and we can find us.
So if you miss this live recording and you want to see what the show looks like before it's edited up, or if you've never seen us and you want to pull back the mystery and go, wow, that's not how I pictured them.
Yeah.
You can watch it.
Yeah, they're YouTube. Much better looking than I thought.
Face for radio.
Face for podcasting. Is that better or worse?
It means you sit in the basement.
Yeah, you broadcast for no cost.
So we do have a few people that are hanging out in the chat room, but they're not really home. They just left their chat bot running again.
They left the lights on. Yeah, they just left the lights on.
Right. To make it look like they're home. They're not really home.
That's correct.
Let's do the Hacks and Strange Stories. Hacks and Strange Stories!
Okay.
Well, Lenny doesn't sound too sick. Odd how that is,
no,
isn't
it? No, he sounds actually pretty good. Put him back on. Put him back on.
Now, when you see a title like this, you just have to think Technorama. There's at least one a week that I go, hey, that's us. You named it by title. Space.
Yeah, they wrote it just for us.
Space crew may brew beer for a sixth grader. That's kind of like buying for an underage.
Yeah.
First thing I thought of.
Hey, mister, can you buy me some beer?
Can you brew?
Here, you got my lunch money.
Can you brew me some space beer, mister?
Yeah.
Staff on the International Space Station hope to raise a toast to a sixth grader in December. That's because they'll be carrying out an experiment proposed by Michael Bodzianowski. Bodzianowski. Mm. Bodzianowski. Love those Polish names. Who won a national science contest for children. He is among 11 pupils who have the chance to have their experiments carried out in space through a competition run by the National Center for Earth and Space Science Education, the NCESSE. I don't think that's really what they call themselves, but the Denver Post explains that Mr. B, that I can't pronounce, got the idea after reading the people in the Middle Ages drank beer rather than water because of the fermentation process killing the bacteria. He put together a proposal to test whether it's possible to brew in microgravity.
Oh.
And
actually, I'm surprised that hasn't come up before because you have all, you know, when you're brewing beer, you have yeast and the whole, you know, the whole shebang. You want the sediment in the bottom and you want the beer on the top, that kind of stuff. Yep. So I wonder how that would work.
So he's saying if the water supply on the space station gets contaminated, they could always use beer as a backup solution.
That's what I've always done myself, so why wouldn't they?
With even a traditional microbrewery a bit too bulky for the ISS, where space and mass is at a premium, Mr. B proposed a very small-scale test. It will use a 6-inch silicone tube divided up by a series of clasps. The tube will be filled with water, malted barley, hops, and yeast. Once in space, the ISS crew will remove the clamps and shake the tube to mix the ingredients and see if it turns to beer. Meanwhile, Mr. B will repeat the experiment with identical equipment back on Earth. His teacher says his work, which was originally designed solely for a school project. What sixth grader is brewing beer for a school project?
His parents probably brew beer, or his dad, maybe.
No, his last name would be Leinenkugel then.
Leinenkugel. Yeah.
Solely for a school project is the perfect lesson on why kids need to learn the process of writing lab reports that might one day become the basis for real proposals. According to the Denver Post, however, winning has come at a price. Although the prize gave Bodnozowski the opportunity to have his experiment run in space, that actual happening was subject to the school raising $21,500 towards the cost of the flight to the ISS, which is being run by commercial firm NanoRox. That sure makes
for expensive. So it's not enough for us to have brew beer with moon dust. Now we got to take the beer to space.
Could you brew moon dust beer in space? Put the two together.
It's very meta. I don't know.
I don't know. That's how a lot of patents go. They just tweak it a little bit and refile the patent.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
You know, though. Something I was just thinking about when you were reading this is I've never thought about scaling down the brew process to something. I wonder how small you could get and still have the brew process work.
Well, that's what I was thinking too. I thought they were just going to take one of those little, you know, micro kegs that just, you know, but even that would be expensive because isn't it something like $10,000 a pound to get something up into space?
Yeah. You talking about one of those little pigs that you can buy and put in the fridge?
Pigs in the fridge. I put my pigs in a blanket.
Well, it's pigs in space.
Nice.
No, you can buy these, they call them pigs, but it's basically a brew kit.
Yeah.
You know, and you just kind of make the stuff and you put it in there and stick it in there. And it's like it's a little tiny keg that, you know, sits in there.
Yeah. What do they call those? I've heard it mentioned a million times and I cannot remember, but shame on me. That's why we don't do a brew cast.
Hey, speaking of scaling small, you know something that really blew my mind. I was reading I'm still reading the Physics of the Future.
Yes.
You know, I'm reading it. I'm not listening to it like you cheated.
How is that cheating?
No. Anyway, we'll talk about that later. But anyway, I was reading and he was talking to mentioning an interview you did with some kind of scientist that was talking about making spaceships very, very small and they would be able to go fast without having to worry about, you know, running into things or be able to send them, you know, these little tiny spaceships very far distances, very fast. To relay data back from various planets or whatever. So basically making a spaceship that was very tiny, it wouldn't take that much energy to actually propel it very fast as opposed to a larger ship. Remember that?
Vaguely. I haven't read it in a long time.
You haven't listened to it in a long time.
And you were dropping out on the audio, so...
So anyway, I thought it was a cool idea of sending out tiny spaceships for cost and energy use.
That'd work.
Yeah.
That'd work.
So anyway, that's what I was thinking. I wonder how small you could scale down the brewing process. So
speaking of
micro brew.
This is
micro, like micro brew.
Speaking of brewing, we have a Wi-Fi kettle that actually messages you instead of whistling while it boils. And at first I thought, this is a clear abuse of technology. You can just hear it. But then I thought, well, if you're hearing impaired, you can't hear your kettle whistle. And then I started reading a little bit more, and this thing has some interesting features. I don't think it's worth the price they're asking, but hey, what the heck? That's, you know, it's like the SkyMall catalog. Someone's got to be buying it, right? Sure. The iKettle might have a terribly cliched name, but it makes up for that unoriginality with loads of novel functionality that might just be enough to justify its $160 price tag. Maybe. After all, how many kettles do you know that politely ask you if you'd like a piping hot cup of tea when you get home at night? Now, it does have a remote app.
Yes, I was just thinking that.
So, the crux of the kettle's capabilities is its ability to connect to your home's Wi-Fi network. This puts it in contact with the accompanying mobile app on your smartphone that gives you complete control over the kettle's functionality, including multiple temperature options for different hot beverages from wherever you have access to your home's wireless network. Oh, so you got to be on the same network? I would have thought you could use this remotely and say, kettle, start brewing me at 204 degrees. So,
and you could poke some holes in your firewall for your iKettle.
Starting the kettle boiling before you get up and head to the kitchen is a wonderful feature, for sure. But it's the iKettle's ability to monitor its internal temperature and alert you when the water is ready that most coffee and tea fans will love, especially since it sends you notifications instead of an ear-piercing whistle. And last but not least, when you walk through the door at the end of a day and your smartphone rejoins your wireless network, the iKettle will even offer to start a fresh brew like your own personal butler who really has only one skill. And if you really want to make it annoying, you could probably hack it with a Raspberry Pi and make it post to Facebook whatever you're drinking. I'm having oolong.
I was thinking that this thing would, the mobile app would actually monitor your search queries and whatnot and your email. So it would know if you had a bad day, it would just make you a hot toddy when you came home.
Congratulations, you've won the hot chocolate badge.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. I checked in with my hot iKettle. Oh, boy.
I mean, the key to making a good cup of tea is the temperature, and you can set this thing for varying temperatures. And I think that's kind of nice rather than just throw it on the stove and let it whistle.
Hmm.
So
160 nice?
No, not 160
to have
nice.
to have your kettle
text you
when it's ready?
No.
Okay.
No. Happy birthday! I'm looking at the birthday calendar, and we have Mad Marv. Our very own Mad Marv, spelled K-Y-L-E, but it's pronounced Marv. In the tradition of helping us pronounce names on the birthday calendar. Thank you. What day is his on? Somehow I got a copy-paste error here. Can you look that up real quickly? I think it's...
What? Who?
Mad Marv. It's sometime between the 23rd, when this week starts, and the 25th, when the next birthday is. We have three on the 25th. Human Shield, Brit on tour, a.k.a. Jason, and Scott in Minneapolis, all on the 25th. Are you going to the wiki?
I'm trying to. Thank you. Hold on.
And on the 28th, Dylan Licata from San Antonio. Happy birthday to all of you. And if you're not on the birthday calendar, and this is your birthday, happy birthday to you also. I know that Monday was Justin Deal's birthday, so happy birthday.
No, we missed a couple. Kyle's is also is on the 25th.
Four beautiful birthdays on the 25th.
Let's count them now. One, two, three, four.
I preferred the guy who would just walk up to like a door and graffiti it. He goes, I'm going to paint a two. You paint a two on a door or something. Like, isn't that vandalism? If you want to get on the birthday calendar, go over to our wiki. It's at chuckchat.com/wiki. We'd love to see your name and give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. And pronouncing your name is always appreciated. Remember when?
Remember one.
Play that Remember When music. Not that. What is with these buttons tonight? Welcome, first-time listener to Technorama. This is the way it usually goes. We remember back when, you know, we used to, our old Remember When thing used to do that.
Remember when a computer used to take up the room the size of your garage?
Remember fossil fuel?
I am a fossil fuel.
Yeah.
Well, one of the oldest mass-produced computers may get up and running again at a computing museum. It's the same model that appeared in several TV shows and films, including Doctor Who and James Bond. Celebrity computers.
Yeah.
The computer has been delivered to the National Museum of Computing in the United Kingdom. Was the first of 150 units of the ICT-1301. This specific model is known affectionately as Flossy. Not fossil fuel, Flossy fuel.
Yeah, I was going to say, Flossy fuel?
Giddy up, Flossy!
The range was among the first designed for use by businesses rather than large research centers and universities. The computer weighed over, get this, 12,000 pounds and took up floor space of 20 feet by 23 feet. That's the size of my old garage. I must have been a prognosticator when we made that thing.
Yeah, there you go. There's a picture of it right there.
Ain't it beautiful?
Yeah, look at the hairdos as well. Not on the computer, but this music the people so operators. Well.
That may seem huge today, but the selling point at the time was the compactness.
This is Soviet-grade laptop.
The compactness.
Not only were the computers much smaller than earlier models, but they used transistors rather than vacuum tubes or valves.
Hey, by the way, let's be clear. This is not George Jetson compact, but it's close.
Yeah, it's George Jetson compactness. They had Skype back then. I mean, up then. The further reduced space, that further reduced the space requirements as you didn't need dedicated cooling equipment or specialist power supplies. You know, that reminds me. My old company just finally put in a new data center for their ERP system in their brand new building. And that sucker took up about as much room as this thing and has a dedicated cooling system and special power supplies.
Yeah.
As long as you had some form of basic air conditioning, you could put the computer anywhere you had room. Anywhere you had 20 by 23 room. This is a massive beast. I mean, sure, it's compact.
You know what this reminds me of is Springs. The company here in town that was big into textiles, and they had a data center near Lancaster, South Carolina. And we went there probably during high school or something like that as a field trip. And they had these huge glass windows really showing off the computer data center, you know? And so you could look in there and you could see the, you know, the tape drives, the whole works. Everybody's doing their thing in there. It was really cool. Even back in the day, they had a laser printer, which was very high end, you know, and it was printing out labels.
Six pages per minute.
Yeah. Yes.
Had to use the right labels, though. Otherwise, it'd get wrapped around the fuser.
I think we call that blistering.
Blistering speed?
Yeah. That's right.
Guess how much this beast cost?
Probably $5 per pound. So, I don't know.
12,000 times. No, you're actually a little, would that be low? 12,000 pounds times five.
I missed the showcase on The Price is Right. Nope. I went over.
250,000 pounds. That'd be like 2,000 pounds per pound. Which is equivalent to about 4 million pounds today, or 6.4 million U.S. dollars in today's money.
Or quid.
For businesses. This is for businesses.
Okay.
Let's see. Although slimline.
You said pounds. I'm sorry.
Today,
you were talking about pounds, and I said, so I said quid. It's also quid.
Wait, we're getting to that. The ICT-1301 was still distinctive thanks to its barrage of indicator lights and the noise of the tape reels. As a result, models were used as props in Blake 7, Doctor Who, and The Man with the Golden Gun. I really want to go see that now. Just to go, hey.
The Man with the Golden Gun.
It's an ICT-1301. Surprised they didn't have one of those somewhere in the IT crowd.
Yeah. Or the Computer History Museum.
What were they working on? They were working on IBM 3101? Similar numbers, I think.
I seem to remember the IBM one, yes.
With the punch cards. Mm-hmm. I wonder how that restoration turned out.
I don't know, but I can tell you, I know that they remodeled the whole place. So I'm curious, maybe we should go back.
Speaking of computers that we were impressed by or promised, back in the 80s, we were promised a computer doctor. IBM's Watson supercomputer may be boning up on its medical bona fides, but the concept of Dr. Watson is nothing new. We've been waiting on our super smart computer doctors of tomorrow for over 30 years.
No kidding. Look at the guy in the picture. He looks perturbed.
He looks like he's having a seizure while he's waiting.
Here, let me pull it up.
In 1982, the book World of Tomorrow, Health and Medicine by Neil Ardley showed kids of the 80s what the doctor's office of the future was going to look like. The room is filled with an automatic diagnosis station, prescription vending machines. That sounds useful in school.
Yeah.
And plenty of control panels sporting colorful buttons. Yeah, why? The computers back then had lots of colorful buttons.
Uh-oh, I see a problem.
What?
This looks like the bridge of the Star, you know, like the Enterprise or something.
It does kind of look like he's sitting at Mr. Spock's science station getting prescription drugs.
Yeah, but I hate it for the kid with the red shirt, though.
Oh, that would be a bummer. Isn't that Spock in the background?
Yeah, look, he's got pointy ears.
Taking his Pond Far medicine.
Here, look. See, he's got pointy ears. his Pond Far suppression medicine.
Dude, there's a Technorama spoof in there somewhere.
But look, this guy right here, he looks like he's having an argument with his electronic doctor.
A visit to what? This is from the book. A visit to the doctor in the future is likely to resemble a computer game, for computers will be greatly involved in medical care. And the government. Now doctors have to question and examine their patients to find out what is wrong with them. They compare the patient's answers and the examination results with their own knowledge of medical conditions and illnesses. This enables doctors to decide on the causes of the patient's problems. Computers, on the other hand, can store huge amounts, vast tracts of land. No, huge amounts of medical information. Doctors are therefore likely to use computers to help them find the cause of illness. Sounds like WebMD.
Yeah, there you go. We made it.
The computer could take over completely, allowing doctors to concentrate on patients who need personal care. Ah, but the computer won't be just a dumb machine that's fed info. The robo-doctor of tomorrow will be able to ask questions of the patient, narrowing down all the possible things that could be wrong. Quote.
Wait a minute. Oh, wait, let me get this correct. So, not everybody needs personal care?
I picture something more like Zoidberg, where you give him some facts and he misinterprets it, and before you know it, your arm is chopped off.
Whoa, where are your gills?
Just let me peel back the skin and remove the skull. Oh, there's some nice graphics down below, too. It looks like one boy keeled over in his chair.
Hey, by the way. Oh, by the way. Here you go. Looking at the comments.
It's Robert Picardo.
I did not see this before.
They have an EMH. Here you go.
Wait a minute. Here you go. The comment for the red shirt kid.
Yeah.
The red shirt kid. Somebody did make a comment on the image and said, if Star Trek has taught me anything about the future is that you shouldn't wear a red shirt. Right. Jim, he's worse than dead.
He's asking help from a computer. Now go down to the next Robert picture. Picardo, there's plenty to poke fun on that picture as well. We have a lady with green shoes and matching shirt. Or I think that's a lady. And disproportionate
Hey,
arms.
In the future, does it matter?
We have the EMH. We have Robert Picardo standing there. Please state the nature of the medical emergency.
Wait a minute. He must be he's doing a virtual physical exam. He's got his hand in the computer. I'd hate to see the receptacle part of that, the patient.
And this boy who's in the waiting room over here has fallen asleep or dead or something.
Actually, it looks like a female laying down. But if you look at the screen, it looks like a dude's anatomy. So that's not cool. There's your problem.
It's like putting a car back together. Extra parts, no problem.
We'll just disregard this. Yeah, I can't help but think. I'm sorry. I'm stuck on this doctor. There's like transporter technology in there, and his hands just come out of a portal somewhere else. Can you turn your head and cough?
Oh, dude. And his patient is three planets away.
Look, he hasn't even got rid of the CB receiver handset.
I like that. Yeah, the Breaker 19. This is your doctor.
Hey, big dummy, can you turn to the left?
All right, before we sign out, you have something in the geek library here. Please elaborate.
Please elaborate. What was I talking about? Let me pull up the show notes. Oh, yeah. I was looking for, you know, Harrison's 11. I can't really show him Nightmare on Elm Street, or can I?
Yes!
But anyway.
Why not?
Huh? Well, he's 11, anyway, so I was thinking of some fun movies to watch during Halloween. So I thought, oh, yeah, Gremlins.
Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, yeah, well, we've seen that, and we'll watch that again. But I got Gremlins off of Netflix, and we watched it. And it's a little more funny than I remember it. Yeah, I wouldn't say it holds up so much, but it's fun to watch. Yeah, you know, but he actually thought it was funny and not scary in the least. Because, you know, you start getting into the bar scene with all the gremlins and they start showing their personalities. One's like the blues guy, got a little hat. Yeah. And, you know, they're all doing their own little thing. But anyway, it was fun to watch and to travel down that road again because I haven't seen it, you know, in what, 15, 18 years maybe? I don't know.
Probably been longer than that for me.
Yeah. What movies would you recommend?
For Halloween?
Yeah, or, you know, I thought about Tremors. Not really a Halloween type movie, but like I said, it's a monster movie.
I say we ask the listeners. There's only a few days left, so let's see what they come back with.
That's right.
Listeners, we want to know good Halloween movies, whether they're old and cheesy or new and scary. Technorama@chuckchat.com is the email address, or let me see if I can get that phone number right this time. 206-222-2428.
Hey, by the way, you got to remember some of the selections of how horror movies involve, you know, the female body parts flying around, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Okay, appropriate for an 11-year-old.
How do you reconcile two naked teenagers running into the woods looking for the killer? I don't know.
And on that note, that brings us to the end of the show. We have two naked teenagers running into the woods away from this show.
I think I heard something. Let's go investigate.
We appreciate your support. If you like the show, there are many ways to show your love. Hey, give us a call. We've asked a few questions in this show. If you can't remember them, rewind and go back. 206-222-2428. We never have any answers. If you're lucky, you learn something.
Yeah.
Email us, technorama@chuckchat.com. We're also on Twitter, C. Tomasi, Step K, and Technorama. The Facebook page on Technorama page there. You know, all these links are in the show notes, but... Dave Slusher kind of called us out and said, you should announce this. You must announce this on every show. So we'll start doing that again.
Yeah.
Find us on Google Plus. Craig, and now, unfortunately, you went through it all at the top of the show anyway. So we're good. Twice. Twice as good as last time.
Oh, man, you break it up.
Website is chuckchat.com. Technorama and a couple other things there. I just wanted to show our appreciation one more time for all the people who are giving the monthly micropayments. Those donations really do help offset the cost of bandwidth and hosting and all that good stuff that comes up. We put hard work every week into this show. Well, okay, we pick up what we can find.
Mediocre work.
Until the next time we try some of this hard work that we spoke of, tell a friend about Technorama, and until next time, binary high five.
101. There you go. That was the dramatic pause.